Good afternoon. Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and I'm privileged today to have three guests in our radio studio, two humans and a dog. I'd like to welcome Mike Lewis, the founder of The Dog Blog. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having us.
And sitting on Mike's lap is a 9.5-pound, 7-year-old Yorkie named Eddie.
Eddie, can you speak? Oh, he's got stage fright. Eddie, can you speak?
Okay, maybe you got that from Eddie. Welcome, Eddie. We're so glad to have you with us, and maybe we'll hear more from you later in the show. And Robin Langley, who is a volunteer trainer in town and the owner of several dogs with lots of experience about training dogs. So obviously, today we're talking all about dogs. We'd love for you to call with your questions either about the dog blog or about maybe training experiences or opportunities in Anchorage. So to communicate with our two guests, Mike and Robin, and maybe to give Eddie a hello over the air, give us a call at 550-8433 in Anchorage, or if you're out of town, it's 1-888-353-5752. You can even email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. I want to remind you that our show repeats tonight at 7, but you can't call in then. So if you want to talk to Mike or Robin or Eddie, you have to call in now. And I want you to know that you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and our website is alaskapublic.org. I have to point out this wonderful video that Mike Lewis did of members of his dog blog meetup. It's on alaskapublic.org on the Hometown Alaska announcement, and it's really fun. It's kind of it's a kind of parade of all your, not your dogs, but dogs that come to your meetup, right, Mike?
Right. All season long, we've been meeting weekly at least once on Saturdays or Sundays or both, and I take hundreds of pictures. So I pulled out some of the best, and they show for about 1 second at a time in the video.
And it actually introduces what the Small Dog Meetup is. So if you're curious, that's one place. Mike kind of narrates through the video and explains a little bit about what goes on there. But Mike, let's not jump ahead of the dog blog. I wanted you to tell people about the dog blog. This is on the Anchorage Daily News website. How did it get started?
Right. Well, in 2007, when we really started ramping up our online efforts, I was called into the boss's office, and she was a new boss who had kind of a reputation for being very, very tough, very fair, but very tough. So I was a little nervous getting called in. And the first thing she said was, well, I'm the one who reviews internet activities from employees. And I think my face probably went red. Because I've been known to visit a dog forum or two while on the job. But instead of that, she said, and I see your interest. I wonder if you'd like to parlay that interest into being host of our new dog blog. So I think I said yes, even before considering it, just to be happy that I wasn't in trouble.
But there's lots of dog blogs out there.
Yeah, there's a little bit of everything, and what my idea was, I wanted it to be different. It's not a typical blog where you go there and get information that I'm providing. I'm asking people, it's more of a dog forum. I'm asking Alaskans to come in and tell me what's going on with their dogs and ask a question for the group. Mm-hmm. And it works pretty well. People will come in with a concern or a training issue, and someone else, an expert, which I'm not, will come in and answer the question or direct them to a good resource. That's how I met Robin, by the way.
Right. Now, Robin, you were a reader of the dog blog, is that right?
That's how I first met Mike and met that community of people. And I'm happy to say they're all friends now.
That's great.
It's become quite a group, but we keep in touch with each other that way and kind of find out what the dog going-ons are around town.
That's what pulled you in? Was it questions about training that you picked up on?
It was a little bit of that. It was also just another way to meet other dog owners that were concerned about being responsible dog owners, and just another way to meet people in the community that had the same passion and
right. Same concerns, same interests, same.
But knowing Robin, if there's anything to do with dogs in the community, she's got her feet in it.
How she knows all about it.
Yeah,
okay,
she's involved in a lot of aspects of the dog community.
Right, but which is great for our listeners. I hope if they've got questions about training or groups in town that deal with dog issues, you know, you're here as a good resource. So I'm curious though, how did the blog? We called this show Dog Tales in Cyberspace, but it actually got physical. You guys ended up, how did that happen where you ended up having meetups?
Yeah, I touched upon this in the video, but one of the most common questions people coming in is, hey, how can we socialize our dog in a safe environment? And there's some people would say, oh, go to any of the dog parks. And people would answer, well, I went to the dog park, my dog got beat up. Or I've got an aggressive dog and he doesn't do well at the dog park. So we just kind of kicked it around. It wasn't even my idea initially. And we said, hey, you know, let's us get together and find someplace safe and give it a try. And it worked out real well.
So you just started to go as a group?
Yeah. Several of us met there, and then we ended up organizing. We weren't sure how legal it is to be letting dogs run loose in different areas of town, so we kind of organized on the side on a Yahoo group, and we decided we went to a fence ballpark and introduced ourselves in person and let our dogs go. And remarkably, they did really well. I mean, very few problems.
Mm-hmm. Now, so you just bypassed the traditional dog parks altogether then?
Right. We wanted a fenced place where dogs that aren't as well-mannered aren't going to run away, which they can in our unleashed dog parks.
Yeah, and I think at the time we had a few dogs that were younger puppies that didn't have quite a good base for not running away.
Right.
So a fence was kind of mandatory for those guys so they wouldn't get away and still have a good chance of socializing.
Do you think that small dogs have a tougher time at the regular dog parks?
Yeah, absolutely. Eddie is very well socialized. Since he was a pup, I had him around big dogs. But the first time I went to University Lake, he ran out there all happy, and some big dog just mowed him down playfully. But Eddie's 9 pounds, and he rolled down a hill, and he wanted nothing to do with the University
of
Lake. Yeah. So I wanted a situation where a smaller area where I know who's coming. People can tell me if their dog has any issues, and I can control it a lot better.
So you're sort of the mayor of the meetup, I guess.
I like that. Mayor Mike.
it kind of evolved that way. In the beginning, we had someone else who was in charge, and she moved. But since then, we've kind of switched more to a little dog meetup, and I think I'm the mayor of that one.
So do you ever have to do any policing? Or, I mean, what does it mean to be the mayor of the dog park or the meetup?
Just communicating. I created a Facebook page for our group so we can, I put the rules out there of our group, which are very loose. Your dog has to be immunized. We have to clean up after our dog. Several very basic, protect your dog. And put those rules out there. And then
it's kind of spread word of mouth through that, and just kind of gotten bigger and better. And and people come and go, you know, with their dogs. And so, you know, you never know who's going to actually show up on a weekend, depending on the weather, too.
Sure.
I have a white dog. I don't go when it's rainy or muddy.
You won't have a white dog anymore.
No.
So can people, we have the Facebook group URL on the alaskapublic.org. So if people are interested and they want to, you know, start communicating with you. They have to ask to be invited into your group. Is that right? But
yeah.
Via Facebook?
Yeah, they can ask. And the one that's active now is a little dog group, 20 pounds and under. We do have big dogs show up. Like I had a lab who was 50 pounds. He was allowed to go to the little dog group. We just want to, it's for the little dogs so they don't get beat up. But if you've got a well-mannered big dog, you're welcome to go too. So yeah, contact me and I'll hook them up.
Okay. Robin, do you know of any other sort of meetups that are going on around town aside from this little dog meetup?
No, there are a lot of loose groups of people that just get together. You know, it seems to sometimes be divided up into breed specific. I do know that the Polar Pug Rescue Group has pug parties. But like I said, that's all pugs.
Yeah, yes.
I think they have an occasional other dog.
Yeah.
But really no other organized groups. This is the only one that I know of.
Yeah. And I think that's the way to go is start groups small. If everybody tried to join our group, we'd be overwhelmed and it would stop working. But I know there's a standard poodle group out there, or there was, just a bunch of friends who had standard poodles and they started their own time. So that's the way to go, a real grassroots effort.
Right. Well, I'm guessing, you know, a fenced dog park, which is, you're in a ball field at this point, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, you're down at Valley of the Moon, I think.
Right.
That keeps the moose away. But what about, you know, we had a question about, well, what about moose and dog parks and loose dogs? And what can we offer people there if they haven't been before? Or what do you think, Robin?
Well, first of all, before you decide to go to a dog park with your dog, you really need to know your dog a little. You know, dogs have different personalities, so to speak, and some dogs really like to play with other dogs, and other dogs have no interest in playing with other dogs. They're more in tune to their owner. So you really have to make sure your dog is the correct dog for a dog park. You don't want to take an aggressive dog out. You don't want to take a fearful dog out. Because then they can have a bad experience, like Eddie getting mown down by a big dog.
And that ended the big dog park experience
exactly.
for Eddie.
Yeah. And once you have those basics down, you also want to have a few basic obedience things down for your protection and for the dog's protection. So you want to make sure that your dog comes when called. I think we had talked earlier that I feel the recall is the absolute most important thing. If you don't teach your dog anything else, teach them a rock-solid recall.
And how do you do that? The million-dollar question.
Yeah, it is the million-dollar question, and it's not something that happens overnight. It's something that you kind of build on, and the first steps is to get your dog to listen to you and to pay attention, and what you want to do is get your dog to turn their head at you every time you say their name. And the easiest way to do that is just look at them, and, you know, with Eddie here, you'd say, Eddie. And when he looks at you, you give him the treat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you do that close up first. And then from afar, you know, they're on the couch and you're in the other room and you call their name and look to see if their head turns, you know, and good boy and treat them. So you want to make sure that they listen to you and they know that when you say their name, they need to look at you. Mm. And that's the first step, because if you can't get your dog's attention, you're not going to be able to call him back. So you build your way up that way, and then you work on the recall itself. And you start with the basic principles are you never call your dog to you and punish them. So you never want to call your dog and then clip their nails or take them to the bath.
Some unpleasant experience.
Exactly. Or shove them in the car if they don't like to ride in the car, or take them to the vet. Always, you know, just go pick up your dog and then do their nails. Don't call them to you. The second principle is always, always, always be happy and excited and treat your dog when they come to you. Never, ever, you know, do it badly. Just get excited. You want a high, happy voice. You want to make it fun. You want your dog to think that you are better than anything else out there.
Exactly.
So whatever that takes for your dog. And then you just kind of build up and do it quietly in your house from short distances and then in your yard and further distances and more distractions. And, you know, what I tell people is it's going to take you at least 2 months of working on it 3 or 4 times a day to really get a good recall. And
wow.
So it definitely takes some time, but it's worth it in the end.
Wow.
And you're talking real short training sessions too, right?
Yes, very short 10-minute training sessions. You don't want to stress your dog out or make them bored or, you know, okay, I already came to you 5 times, why would I do it again?
I'm tired.
Exactly.
This is not fun anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. And that really is the key, is to keep it fun and make them want to be with you.
So basically you would, in this dog park moose situation, you really would get your dog before they've even...
Yes, and that's one of the things at the dog park is to be vigilant for your dog. You're there to protect your dog as well. So I always keep my eye on other dogs. I see another dog coming up the road. I want to look at their body language and make sure they're going to be friendly. If not, I call my dog to me. I always carry a leash with me just in case. And if I see a moose, I call my dog to me and have them near me.
Do you bring treats to the dog park?
I do. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I suggest everybody does. Even though my dog will come to me without the treats, I have them there just in case.
I'm surprised how many people don't do that. And
it's
just a good training tool.
Right. Always effective, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you can reward your dog when they do something good, whether it's the first time or the 100th time they've done it, that's what you want to do, because that'll keep them coming.
Right. By the way, I want to mention to folks that we had some demonstrations of Eddie performing before the show began, and we had the opportunity to take a little bit of video of it. And sometime during the show, I think we'll get it up on alaskapublic.org or our Facebook, Alaska Public on Facebook, and you'll see Eddie. And basically, Eddie performed for treats, which is what made me think of it. I mean, you gave a command, and he gets rewarded when he does.
Yeah, there's kind of a fine line between obedience and begging. he likes his treats, but he'll also perform for toys. He goes nuts over toys, and you could use those two methods to train a dog to do anything. Either if they're toy motivated, use a toy. Treat motivated, go with treats.
Let me put out our phone number because this is such good information. I want to make sure if people have questions, they get a chance to call in and ask you. We're at 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752, or we will take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Let's see. So treats, and I know my dog will do anything for a treat, but I think it's more like begging than... You know, it's like, in fact, she goes over to the treats and looks at me and looks at the treats and looks at me. And it's like,
oh, but see, in that situation, she's training you.
Yes, that's exactly correct. What do I do?
You don't give in. if you really can't resist, the best thing to do is get the treats out and then make your dog do something for it.
Make them sit, make them lay down,
make them do something, even if it's something easy, but make them work for it. Don't just give in and give it to them because they're cute.
An article a trainer referred to me was called Nothing in Life is Free. And that's exactly what that's all about, is don't just give your dog a treat because he's cute or he's sitting there. Make them do something all the time, every time.
Does that build their self-esteem?
Well, it's that, and dogs like to work. Dogs evolved from mostly working stock breeds that were used to do things. And if you don't give them jobs, they'll get into trouble. They'll find things to do themselves.
Yeah.
So if you make them work for it and make them think, that's one of the things with training. It's not just about training your dog to do what you want them to do. It's about working with them and having fun with them and keeping their minds occupied as well as their bodies and everything else.
Right. You know, one of the things I read is that lots of people, and there's lots of dogs in the United States. I mean, something like 78 million dogs, I think. And, 60% of people have at least one dog. I mean, there's just astounding numbers. But a lot of people have more than one dog. And then you get into a situation where there's hierarchies in a household, right?
Absolutely.
Now, do you have more than one dog, Robin?
I do. I have three right now.
So there's a hierarchy there that has to get worked out?
Oh, definitely. I started with, I have a little Maltese who's about seven. His name is Batman. And he was the alpha dog. He was the guy who was in charge in the house. And then we added Brownie, who was a Chesapeake Bay Retriever. And she is very mellow and not an alpha. And so she let him do what he wants. So basically he goes out the door first. He gets fed first. He, kind of rules the roost. And then we just recently last summer added a third dog, which is another male Chesapeake. And he's upset the pecking order. So we've had a few skirmishes in our house related to that.
Is it going to continue, or does something have to happen?
Well, right now it's mostly about me managing that behavior and keeping them separated at times. The other contributing factor is my Maltese is older and has some health issues, and so he has a personal space issue right now because of the pain he's in and everything else. So multiple contributing factors. It's never easy when your dogs don't get along.
Yeah. Right.
But there's ways to work around things.
And it won't be a persistent problem, you don't think? I mean, it's something you'll manage, but eventually they'll work it out?
You would hope so. Sometimes, there's two schools of thoughts on that. There's the group of people that think that all dogs should just work it out amongst themselves. However, when I have a 75-pound Chesapeake and a 7-pound Maltese, they can't really work it out because there might be bloodshed.
Unintentional squishing.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, for now I help to manage that because they can't.
And Mike, do you have more than one dog?
Yeah, I have two right now. And we ran into the same thing. Eddie was just the sweetest dog. He was the only dog we had. He was perfect. He passed his therapy dog test. And then all of a sudden I thought, I wanted to have a friend. So I got a 10-year-old Yorkie, just a tiny, frail little thing. And Eddie just started beating him up. A vicious, vicious fight.
Eddie! I can't believe it, Eddie!
We were stunned. He just had this alpha issue. And it was a really long, long process. I ran across a behaviorist online. I'm not sure about their qualifications, but they gave me some good advice. And it was months of working every day. I kept him on a leash during toy time. They were always fighting over toys. He stayed on a leash during toy time, and they each got their own toys. But it was a month before I noticed anything, and then 6 months before it was relatively done, but it could still crop up anytime.
On a bad day.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's I guess there's a lot of people then that probably have those kind of issues when they have multiple dogs in the house.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing to realize, a lot of people come into training classes or email or call or ask and say, well, my dog has this issue and I need it fixed now.
Oh, yeah. Like today.
Yeah. Like today or yesterday. Uh-huh. And when one thing to know is it takes time. It's just like with people, it's hard to break your habits. It's just as hard to break a dog's habit if they're used to always getting their own way, or Eddie was used to being the only dog and having everything he wanted, and now he has to learn to share. So it takes time to train your dog.
Mm-hmm. Mike, I wanted to touch back on the dog blog, because I know it's not just you writing on the dog blog things that you find out about dogs or posting. You're actually engaging people with some questions, right?
Right. That was the big thing when I started. My question was, hey, I'm not really qualified as an expert to start telling people things about their dogs. But what I could do is ask them questions, bring the experts into me. So I have different topics. On Monday, I usually pose a question. I think you put some examples on the website, but usually pretty innocuous question.
Does your dog chase critters?
Yeah.
I remember that.
I'm just trying to get people talking. And then on Friday, we have Friday Training Talk, where tell us, you know, you got something to brag about, you have an issue, bounce it off the group. And one of the more popular, the thing that really made the dog blog work when it started, it was real slow, and I got this idea from different forums, is I had an anything goes topic, and you come in and tell me what you want to talk about, and that from time to time gets real popular too. Someone will come in, hey, I got a dog next door, it was barking like crazy, what do I do? And someone else will chime in, here's what you do, and it really. I don't have to do anything when it's working perfect.
But. Right. So different. Do you ever have any bad participation that you have to curtail?
You know, it's been amazing since the beginning. I don't know what it is about people responsible enough, dog owners, to go online looking for information about their dog, but it's really been real civil.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it get hostile or, you know.
No.
Or,
which is kind of unusual, because sometimes these online anonymous commentating places can be a little scary or unnerving, but you haven't had that experience.
Right, and part of it is due to the meetups we had, because there was a time there where we all knew everybody who was commenting. So you can't come on anonymously and be a jerk and then see me on Saturday.
You'll be talking to him, or Eddie will be talking to him. Right. So, I also thought that probably if there are issues in town around dogs, they might surface on the blog or they might surface to you as a trainer. Fireworks comes to mind as one that's been big. It was big last year because I think for the first time we had fireworks in town on
New Year's
Eve.
Right.
And I know in my neighborhood, I heard a lot about it. I saw signs posted where my dog ran out of the house and I'm looking for him, you know, things like that. So there were some dramatic things that seemed to happen in my neighborhood. Have you guys heard about that? Was it a topic on?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was real divisive. You're on one side or the other and you don't understand the other side's issue. I was kind of, when I was a kid, I used to love popping off fireworks, but when I got Eddie, he's one of those dogs who has a real problem with it. He's a perfect dog otherwise, but if a firework or gunshot goes off, he just starts shaking, and it's real bad. He won't eat. He'll crawl under beds. So when the fireworks start popping off, it feels like cruelty to animals. So I'm adamantly opposed to them, but there are other people who don't have a problem with them. They haven't seen, their dog doesn't do that.
Yeah, I was reading, I think you sent me a link to a recent, maybe October Anchorage Daily News article about it's resurfacing again, and some people are thinking about making changes. And reading some of the comments on that story, people were saying, oh, they're just dogs. They should be out barking at the fireworks anyway. It's not a big deal, you know, and just didn't seem to register with people that it might be really disturbing to some dogs.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, I don't know if you appreciate it. I have a 4-pound dog, Yorkie, who's half Eddie's size. She has no problem with him, just naturally. And I don't know what it was about Eddie, but he does. So
yeah. Well, we've got a caller. I'd like to get her on. Hi, Becky.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I have, I have two dogs who are sisters, and one's a Chihuahua poodle, the other's a Chihuahua dachshund, and they're very close. And the interesting thing is that in the past, I got my dogs one at a time, and they managed to get along pretty well. And but the thing is, I was just hearing about the fireworks. They scare my dogs half to death.
Yeah, I can sympathize.
And so what happens is, a lot of times, the fireworks go off at night, fortunately. And so if I'm in bed, they'll just get in bed with me and crawl under the covers.
Hide out.
Yeah. That's whatever works. I say, some people say, oh, don't coddle your dog, don't coddle your dog. But we're at the stage where whatever calms them down is the best way to do
it. Well, that's what I do. They sleep with me normally anyway. And if I have to be out, which I was once, I put them in their crate, and that seems to comfort them more.
Mm. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
A lot of dogs, when they're crate trained properly, really feel comfortable in there. And so in stressful situations like noisy fireworks, that sometimes can be a godsend to put them in there.
Yeah. So right. Becky, did you have a question about your two dogs?
No, I've had them now for about 8 years, and so they're not youngsters anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But they're very close.
You mean close to each other or close to you?
To each other and to me, but more to each other.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Do you see that, Robin?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, especially if they're close in age. And it seems to be breed-specific as well. A lot of, you know, breeds that, like, pugs stick together. And, you know, if you have two dachshunds, they'll stick together a little more often than say, you know, a Yorkie and a Chihuahua. They might not be quite as close.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you've got some nice dogs there, Becky.
Well, my first dog was a Scottie, and she got attacked by a bigger dog. When my vet asked me if I knew anyone who wanted a Scottie, they had one that had been rescued. And I said, well, I can take her until you find a permanent owner. And Scooter was kind of ornery, the second Scottie. But she made Tina feel safer.
Hmm.
And because Tina would just go out and, you know, shrink away from all the dogs that she'd ever barked at. And the funny thing is, Scooter was kind of ornery, but then after Tina died, she became very clingy to me.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Relationships. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that dog death thing is something I'm going through right now. I just yesterday lost a lab, a 50-pound lab that I rescued and had for 4 years, and I can see the difference in the little ones. There was another, my 4-pound Yorkie was especially close to the lab because Eddie's a bully, and the lab was kind of the protector. And I can really, really see it. She's a little out of sorts, so I'm concerned about that.
Mm-hmm.
She'll go to Robin.
Well, what happened was I was taking her, I was taking Scooter into the SPCA for grooming, and they had a little Sheltie Dachshund mix. And I knew I had to get Scooter a friend. And this one was pretty young, and so I adopted her, and Scooter became a mom. She just hovered over that little dog.
Oh, okay.
I was worried.
Yes, I was worried, too.
I was going to go into the spay discussion.
Yeah. She became a mother hen, sort of, huh?
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh. Well, that's great. It's interesting. It makes me want to go back to you, Robin, and talk a little bit. By the way, thank you, Becky, for calling. That is really nice to hear those stories. This whole idea of the relationship between the owner and the dog, and how do you cultivate it? One of the first things you said was, you know, get to know your dog. And I guess I'd just like to ask, how do you do that? It seems simple. Why can't you get to know your dog? But I bet you see a lot of people in training classes that don't really know their dog.
Absolutely. Sometimes, you know, people just get a dog because they have that spur of the moment. Oh, it's adorable. It needs a home. Let's go take it home. And really, sometimes it's important to know what type of dog you're getting. You know, are you getting a dog that's going to have high energy needs and need a lot of training? Are you getting a dog that's a couch potato? What do you want out of your dog? You know, so you really, it starts with how you actually go find a dog, and finding a dog that fits into your lifestyle. Do you have kids? Are you active? Do you run every day? You know, those type of things you want to really get an idea of. And then you take your time and find out different dog personalities. You know, if you want a dog that's a lover and a snuggler, and you get a dog that's not interested in you, you know, you might have some personality conflicts there, or, you know, maybe not bond as well with that dog because you want something different than what they want.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, yeah. And the other thing is to find out what your dog really likes to do and then learn to do it with them. Mm-hmm. And that's your bonding time and your training time. I don't see training as just simply a way to make your dog be a better dog. It's about bonding with them and learning more about your dog and their body language and you and having fun with your dog. They're you know, almost like another part of your family, and you just do different things with them than you would your kids.
That's so great. Well, we're if you're just tuning in, we're with Mike Lewis, and sitting on Mike's lap is 9.5 pound. Yorkie named Eddie, who's been here for the entire interview, and Robin Langley, who's a volunteer trainer in town. Two people who know a lot about dogs, love them, say they're dog lovers but not experts. And we're wondering if Eddie's going to say
Eddie, speak. he's looking at the lights.
He's being shy
today. All right, so maybe when we come back. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. This is Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. Our topic today is dog tails in cyberspace, but actually we have a dog right here in the studio with us. He's a little Yorkie named Eddie. And before the show began, we took a little video of Eddie doing a few tricks. He's a therapy dog, and Mike was telling us that Eddie goes and visits people, and one of the things he does is tricks. So we captured some of that on video, and we love you to enjoy it with us. You can find it on Facebook. Just search Alaska Public on Facebook and like us there if you like, and enjoy Eddie doing his tricks. One of them was the sneeze, right? What was the sneeze about?
The sneeze trick. I taught him a bunch of obedience, and I taught him a bunch of different tricks, and all of a sudden I realized, you know, he's really not doing anything for me. I want him to do a service for me. So somebody told me about the sneeze trick, and I put a box of tissues out. I sneeze, and he goes and brings it to me.
And we have that on film, and you'll see it. Yeah. And we're also here with Robin Langley, who's a volunteer trainer, dog owner, a dog blog reader, lots of experience with dogs. And, you know, we invite you to call in with your questions. We've got them for another half hour or so, and it's 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752 outside of Anchorage, or send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. Our show repeats tonight at 7, but you can't call in, so now's your good opportunity to call in. Robin, before the show, you and I were talking about, this was my question, sometimes have my dog on a leash, sometimes not on a leash at a dog park. And it creates situations that I really wasn't ready for. And tell me why that happens.
Well, there's a few different reasons. When a dog is on leash, they're attached to somebody else. And they can't do the proper exhibiting of greeting behaviors for dogs. They can't properly circle around and eyeball the dog and sniff and do all the things that dogs do, you know, to size each other up before they go run over to them. So if you're at a dog park and your dog's on leash and another dog's off leash, off-leash, 9 times out of 10, the off-leash dog's going to run up to your dog, and it can create a panic situation for some dogs in that they can't do what they would normally do, and they feel threatened, and they feel constricted, and they can't run away, and so they tend to, you know, get a little more nervous.
And so that might lead to an altercation.
It can, yeah.
Do you have ever seen that, Mike?
Oh, absolutely. With my own dogs, and if one's on a leash and the other one's not, it's a problem. And that's kind of why we got into the meetups. We let them all off leash. We watch them closely. But if the dogs are given space, they're a lot more relaxed. The dog I just lost yesterday, I got him as a rescue. And when he came, he was terrified of all the other dogs. And his reaction would be to attack. He was a sissy, but he didn't know what else to do. It was a passive aggressiveness, and it was a real problem. But I walked him to the corner of the park and then introduced him one at a time to the other dogs. And gradually, over the course of a summer, he relaxed. And now he was really good.
I'm so sad. I didn't know that you'd lost a dog yesterday. That is very sad. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We have a caller, so let's put them on. Hello, Kate.
Hi.
Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Oh, thanks. I have a puppy, a 9-month-old puppy, and we're in the process of learning how to come. It's very tricky, and I get where you say it's one of the best things you can teach your dog, because I get that. My question is, we go walking, and it's pretty late at night, and I know we're the only ones out. And so I like to practice then. I'll take him off the leash, and we'll walk, and I'll have him stay and come. And you know, he's kind of rambunctious. But is that okay? Because obviously there are times when he won't be following me. He won't come. So I'm just wondering, should I always have him in the backyard and under control when I work with him?
Well, that's ideal, is to keep them in a place where you know you can always get them. One of the other basic principles that I don't think we talked about earlier is whenever you give your dog a command, like to come to you, whether it's here or come, you always need to make sure you can back it up. So you can never, ever let them think that they can't come to you. So in your case, what I would recommend and what I do with my dogs when they get to that stage where they're pretty reliable in my house and in my yard but not in other places is I put them on a flexi leash, and you've got about 16 feet there. And before they get to the end of the leash, use your recall word. And if the dog doesn't come right away to you, you can reel them in. So it's a way to, and you can still get your exercise because the dog can get away, but you're also giving them kind of, you know, a backup system. If they don't come to you right away, you can kind of reel them in, still have your happy, good voice, and still treat them when they come to you, and then repeat it over and over again.
And the risk is if the dog can get away and does, it's going to have more fun. There's going to be more of a reward sniffing another dog or running down the road.
Or having you chase them. Yeah. Most dogs love the chase.
So, yeah, Robin's absolutely right. That long lead ensures that he's going to come to you.
Do you have one of those leashes?
No, I don't at all.
You can also just take a big long piece of rope and tie it onto the end of your leash and, you know, give yourself 15, 20 feet. It's a little cumbersome to handle, but it's a safety net for you to bring your dog back in and to make sure that they are always coming back to you.
You win.
Yes,
you
exactly.
Reel
exactly.
them in if you have to. That's
exactly.
A really good piece of advice.
Yeah.
Well, Kate, that sounds good.
Can I have asked one more question?
Sure.
He will not listen at all if there's another dog nearby. Is that, and I recognize that I have training to do, but is that something that he eases out of as he gets out of puppyhood?
Well, again, that is, you're right on track there. It is a training issue. And what we recommend, and a lot of people kind of miss this step, is you know how to train your dog to do something, and you know what the result is, But we often skip the steps where we introduce distraction slowly. And so if his big problem is another dog in the area, maybe you want to work with maybe a dog in the next door, you know, yard where he can see the other dog but can't get to the other dog. And so you work up to distractions, or you're at a park and the other dogs are, you know, say, you know, 30 or 40 feet away while you're working on your recall, and then get closer and closer and closer. And then eventually when they're at the dog park, you can then basically use it as a double reward. You call your dog to you, you give them the treats, and then you release them again immediately to go play with the other dogs. But you have to kind of build up to that situation. You can't expect any dog, especially puppies, to run away from playtime.
Oh, my gosh.
Temptation.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So it will happen. It just takes a lot of time, and you have to build those distractions slowly.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks
Good
for
luck.
Calling.
That's a great, two great questions. Mm-hmm. Really, really great questions. You know, her questions made me think about whether people have a clear idea of what it's going to take to train their dog. Like Mike, you say every day you work with your dogs.
Mm-hmm.
It might be short time period, but do most people know what's entailed in actually training, or do you find
No.
Okay. Simple answer, no.
No, absolutely not. You know, I personally recommend that you train your dog either in a, especially in classroom situations, for the entire first year of your dog's life. And the reason for that is your dog's going to go through different developmental stages, different fear periods. Between 4 and 6 months, they have a fear period where things are a little scarier, and training can reinforce the good things and, you know, reinforce your bond with them. But in reality, most people will not do that.
What happens is they wait until the behavior problems are naturally developed. It's going to happen. And then they go to a trainer and say,
and they want a quick fix. And that's what makes it harder to fix.
Okay. So by then it's established in the dog. And you say it's predictable. You know the dog, a puppy is going to develop some bad habits if you're not paying attention.
Yeah.
Oh,
if,
absolutely.
They look so perfect and cute.
Yeah. If you're not showing them what fun is, they'll find out on their own.
They'll find their own fun.
Yeah.
But you know, at a minimum, you really want to train your dog those first 6 months. Those are the first most
at the minimum
bare minimum.
Yeah. And what do we say, 6 months of half an hour a night?
6 months of I tell my students, you know, 3 or 4 short training sessions a day. You can train your dog every time you feed your dog. You can do sits, down, stays, weights, recalls, sending them to the food, tricks, whatever you want. And that's a twice a day training opportunity. You have to feed your dog anyway. What's another 2 minutes of making them do something before they get to eat?
So really, we're not talking about an hour in a class
with 15
other dogs at the end of a hard work day yourself.
No.
That's not what you're talking about.
No, but training classes are important as well, because it teaches the dog to work within distractions. And most of the places around town, Alyeska Canine Trainers, Alaska Dog Sports, Obedience Training, Club of Chugiak, places in the valley like Better Companion, they all have puppy playtime and socialization time for those first, you know, few classes that you go to. And that's extremely important, especially if you're not getting out to a meetup or a doggy park, for dogs to learn other dog body languages and get used to big dogs and small dogs.
Right, right.
That was really critical. I learned the hard way with Eddie. He was a sort of a rescue. I got him at about 3 months. And he hadn't been socialized, and I didn't know what I was doing. So I didn't really try to get him into socializing. And that's, I think, the root of his aggression issues with other dogs. By the time I got my last dog, a 4.5-pound Yorkie, I knew, I had learned on the dog blog and from taking classes with Eddie, that socialization is just so important. And I had Jilly out when she was 12 weeks running around with bigger dogs and little dogs, and it she's a social butterfly now.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I was thinking about rescue dogs where people maybe, like Becky did, good-hearted, okay, I'll take on that dog, and you really don't know. It's a discovery period, what kind of behavior you're going to inherit with that dog, and then to begin working with an older dog.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I've done rescue in Alaska for quite some time with Maltese and now with Chesapeake Bay Retrievers. And you first of all, the rescuer has to get to know the dog. And then once we get to know the dog, we have to pair up that dog with somebody that will work. And it's hard. If you just walk into animal control, there's great dogs there. But the dog you see in those kennels is not necessarily necessarily the dog that's going to be the dog in your house in a month. Once mm-hmm. they get settled in, the behaviors come out. It's like, you know, they're on their best behavior those first few weeks, but once they get comfortable and kind of see where they can push you or do things, they just naturally will do what dogs want to do, you know, get up on the furniture, chase the cat, whatever it might be.
Right, right. So that's something to think about if you're thinking about rescuing a dog.
Absolutely.
It's easier to train a puppy, I think, but rescues, older dogs can definitely be trained, learn new tricks.
Oh, they can. And what I recommend with any rescue is once they get that rescue, immediately get them in a dog obedience class, a basic obedience class. Because even if the dog knows all the tricks and knows how to sit and walk on a leash and everything, you want to have that bonding time with the dog so that they learn that you are the alpha and you are the, you know, you're the one that's going to be there for them now. And you've got to learn to work together. Mm. And so classes are just the basic way to learn that with your dog in a controlled environment.
So you establish yourself as the alpha with treats. What other ways that you let your dog know you're the alpha?
You know, that's a contentious subject between trainers okay. as well. And everybody has a different opinion, to be honest. And it depends on what you want out of your dog, again, and what your dog is like. If you have a really pushy dog, you want to make sure you're doing things first, like you go through the door first. You know, you don't let them push you around. You don't let them up on the sofa if you don't invite them up. So it's establishing boundaries. I guess being the alpha isn't the word I want to use. It's more establishing the boundaries, establishing the rules. It's just like with children. You know, you want to let them know what's right and what's wrong, and you know, things. Mm-hmm. Things are going to be how they're going to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I often think that we underestimate how intelligent dogs are. I'm sure my dog knows certain words, lots of words. I mean, she responds to them. So what do you think about dogs and language?
Oh, I think it's absolutely fascinating. There is a border collie, and I forget the name of the dog. It was on the Discovery Channel not too long ago. This dog has a vocabulary of like 350 words.
Oh, I was feeling good at five.
Oh, yeah. No, this dog knows everything. You can tell them, you know, it's got this bucket of toys, and you can tell them car, and it'll go pick out the car. You know, there are service dogs out there that have an amazing vocabulary and knowledge and working knowledge about what their person needs without having to be asked. So I think they're very intelligent creatures that we don't know enough about.
Right. And another thing I notice sometimes when I come home from work and it's been a long and hard week, my dog goes out on the back porch and flattens herself on the back porch, and she looks depressed. I don't know if she is or not. I mean, do dogs get depressed?
Absolutely. I think so. You know, like Mike was saying with the loss of his Rusty, you know, the other dogs feel it, and they have to mourn just like the rest of us do when we lose someone. And dogs have feelings. They get tired. They get cranky. They get, you know, depressed. Absolutely.
They want to run all the time, and you don't always have that time. So that's when mine get depressed.
Right. What do you do? I mean, they're mine's at the back door, like, come on out, come on out. And I can't.
I have them on a schedule, and it's they walk in the morning, they walk at night. We train at this time, we eat at this time, and it's very regimented. And that seems to do it. They know they're going to get their walk at such and such a time, so they don't harass me at other times.
Oh, yeah, but that can backfire on you. You know, a couple years ago, I blew out my knee, and my dogs were used to that every day, 3 mile a day walk. And when I blew out my knee, there was no going out.
Oh, that's tough.
So that's tough too. But you know, training in your house can be just as mentally exhausting as a physical run sometimes. So if it's 20 below and you really don't want to go out with your dog and your dog wants to go, sometimes a good training session teaching them a new trick can do the job and give them something to do.
Interesting. I had never thought of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought they just physically had to burn off energy, but they can also burn it off working.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not quite as, you know, it's not physically as satisfying, but definitely you can take the edge off.
Get you through the day.
They'll take a nice long nap after a good training session like that.
Yeah. That's amazing. I have not done that, so that's news for me. Let me put out our numbers one more time. We've got a few more minutes. 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752 outside of Anchorage, or send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. So let's see, what haven't we covered yet? We've covered some good territory here.
The dog parks in the city, we have five unleashed parks, And there's always, or occasionally, there's an effort to get a city-sponsored leash or a fenced dog park. And I'm always interested in that. The latest one I heard was the South Anchorage, what's it called, the South Anchorage?
It's off of Clatt Road. It's the sports complex or They had the paintball down there, and they're redoing some of the baseball fields.
But there are plans to put a fenced dog park in there. There's just not the money right now. Anchorage Unleashed has been working on it. But if you have a dog and you see that issue coming up, definitely weigh in. And I think a fenced dog park or more would be a great thing for town.
Is there not a area of Kincaid that has fencing for training dogs? I thought there were,
No.
For some reason, I thought there was, I thought they might have even been military dogs or something like that.
No, most of the, I worked at Animal Control many years ago, and when they bring in new dogs, they usually house them there and work with them there.
And it's kind of a contentious issue. People will want to take their dog to a fence park, and what's fence? It's Little League fields or the adult softball fields. The adult softball does not want dogs in their parks. So it's a problem. We go to Valley of the Moon Park because there are no organized leagues there. We clean up fastidiously, but there really aren't that many places in town.
And I think that's the main concern is that owners don't clean up their
dogs'
waste.
That's something we should touch on. Yeah. How are we doing in Anchorage?
Not so well.
I'm not happy to hear that.
No, I'm actually on the Scoop the Poop Committee as well. And, yes, we get together and talk about cleaning up poop. it's on my calendar's poop meeting, and you know, I always get a chuckle out of that when I see it. But
time for my poop meeting.
Exactly, and that's sponsored through Anchorage Waterways, and started because of the contamination to the public water systems and the creeks and everything else. And really, we don't do a great job. You know, our group does get out there, and in the spring we sponsor a cleanup day, and in the fall we're doing a cleanup day now. But really, that's more about education. I think a lot of people either don't think about it, or their dog runs so far off the trail in the snow that they don't want to wade through the snow to pick it up. So that's definitely a problem. But, you know, if you're going to own a dog, you're going to clean up poop, whether it's in your yard or when you take them on a walk.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just a part of having a dog. And it's, you know, if you don't want a lot of poop, get a smaller dog.
Okay. Well, you know, we still have a few more minutes, but often we get calls right at the end. And I always try to squeeze in whatever people really are calling about. So we have Jeanette. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi.
Welcome. Hello. What's your question?
Thank you. I am calling about, we have three dachshunds, not the big ones, the mid-sized dachshunds. And the first one is Dr. Bob. He's the alpha. And then there's Frankie. Bob's 7, Frankie's 6, and McGee is 5. Bob's neutered. He came that way to us. Frank and McGee are not neutered. And I would say for the most part, during the day, they get along just fine. Come evening, there's a little ritual that Frank and McGee go through, like, I'm next. And they have growls at each other. McGee has had a little blood from his ear one time, and
so they're challenging.
Pardon?
They're challenging each other, huh?
Yes. And I'm wondering if they were neutered when they were younger. I don't know about neutering now. Would this not happen?
What do you think?
You know, neutering is a touchy subject as well. If you neuter a dog early enough before the testosterone really gets producing, you're going to have a little bit of a subtle behavior change. It might stop marking or anything like that. The older they get, not so much. You definitely will take the edge off of things by ridding the testosterone out of that system. But boys will be boys. And whether they have their parts or not, they're still going to probably go through that.
So, okay. Well, thanks, Jeanette.
They're all real sweet. you know.
Well, that's good.
I love
we
dachshunds.
We don't have this problem during the day. It's only at night. So.
Oh, that's yeah, and it could be, you know, competition for a favorite spot. It could be, you know, competition for your time. So it just, you know, there's a million different reasons why they might do that.
Yeah.
So thanks, okay. Jeanette. We're going to try to squeeze in another call. So hello, Ruth. Hi, Ruth.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. What I was calling about, this is kind of a fairly selfish call. It's regarding Valley of the Moon Park.
Okay.
I live in that neighborhood, and I use that park, the enclosed ball field, on a daily basis with my dog, and it's a larger dog. And I know you all meet down there. I think it's usually on Sundays in the early afternoon, and it's a bunch of little dogs, so I don't bring my dog in. But I have to say that it concerns me that you're talking so much about this fabulous little park right in the neighborhood.
Yeah, it's I really
end up losing it.
I don't blame you. I really thought twice about mentioning it, but I can't lie about it either. I mean, that's where we're going. It's not going to work if you get 1,000 people going to Valley of the Moon Park. It was a solution for one problem. And frankly, when too many dogs show up, we end our meetups right there. So
yeah,
I apologize.
And it's not just Valley of the Moon. There's other parks that I've seen people gathering at, you know, and yes, it does scare away the regulars that are usually there and kind of consider it their park. I used to live down in that neighborhood, and I took my dog there every day for, you know, enclosed ball time. So I do understand, but it's also, you know, it's a balance. It's a delicate balance. You've got to find a place that's safe enough for the little dogs to play. But
yeah, I mean, I'm totally fine. I see the little dogs in there, and then we don't go in. It's like that, you know, that's good. And not when there's a lot of them, because that runs the risk of too many, of the potential of them getting injured by the bigger dogs. And I mean, I just love the park, and it's a fabulous place for me to socialize my dog, who's a rescue puppy, and but she will not respond and come back to me when she sees another dog.
Some work to do there, huh?
Yeah, we're working on it.
Yeah, that's probably the hardest thing.
Yeah. I guess I'm just, like, concerned that if we keep talking about that park so much.
Yeah, I understand.
Somebody will step up and say, what are those dogs doing in there? That's not for them.
I definitely understand. So everyone out there, please forget what I said.
And if you do go there, make sure you clean up.
Absolutely.
Oh, I always do. Always, always, always. And when I see other folks who don't, I always offer them a...
Excellent.
Good for you.
We're all in this together.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's the reality. Sharing space, multi-use, all that, it's part of it.
Well, and I think that's one of the reasons why people have pushed for a fenced-in dog park for so long is that, you know, there's a lot of dogs that are not comfortable or that will run away, like her puppy or several of our dogs sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
And so there is a push for that. And then I think if we had a fenced-in dog park, we wouldn't, you know, have people taking over other parks that are not meant for that.
Yeah. Well, guys, we're running out of time. I really want to thank you. I want to thank Eddie very much. He's been quiet, but he's been listening the entire time. And Mike Lewis from the Dog Blog and Robin Langley, a local trainer. You guys have been awesome, and it's really been fun having you on. I think we're going to see if we might hear from Eddie.
One more time. Eddie, last chance. Ready? Ready? Can you speak? Speak. I don't know if you heard it. Eddie, speak.
Come on, Eddie.
Speak.
He's being polite.
Okay.
Wow, wow, wow. He had one little wolf.
Thank you, Eddie. And please check our Facebook page, Alaska Public, for a little bit of video on Eddie and also Mike Lewis's wonderful dog park video that he shared. We've had a great time talking about dogs and the people who care for them. Thanks to my guest, Mike Lewis, founder of the Dog Blog on the Anchorage Daily News website and owner of Eddie. And thanks to Robin Langley, dog owner and volunteer trainer with a lot of experience. Coming up next on Hometown Alaska, a special edition of our show this Friday, November 11th at 2 p.m. p.m. I'll be back as host, and our guest will be Richard Nelson, the cultural anthropologist, writer, and host of the radio show Encounters. Please connect on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.